Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Did you bring your thinking caps? Because it's time to put them on. Because the conversation starts now. What you doing today, Tyler? You ain't doing nothing today?
He works from home.
Yeah, I'm working. Let me see you.
You handsome rascal. Look at you.
I'm working from home. So
what kind of work do you do?
I'm a technical recruiter.
A technical recruiter. So you recruit tech heads?
Yep. There you go.
Oh, all kind?
Yeah, for the most part. But
get in here. Let me see your face. Talk to me. Let me see your face.
My bad. I was off to the side. But yeah, I'm in project. I recruit on project management roles, so mainly.
Oh, is there a lot of women in that space now?
There needs to be more, but it's growing. I'm definitely connecting with a lot of women, especially women of color. So
women of color, okay. Are they doing engineering and STEM?
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, good. Let me know, man. I'll bring you back on the show and talk to you about that because we need to ratchet up. Because they couldn't have got to the moon without a woman.
There you go. There you go.
All right,
go.
Thank
Would
you.
Would love to.
So
but
you and Leslie, my daughter in Texas, convinced me to do this.
Exactly. All right, nice meeting you too. He's a cute little chocolate drop. Yes, he is.
Yes, he is.
Now, where are you at, Carolyn? Where do you live?
In Greenville, North Carolina.
You know what? I'm getting so many people from North Carolina. What is happening down there? Is the property and the taxes right? Because everybody's calling me from North Carolina.
The property is much less. You could get something really nice for less than $500,000 here.
Really?
Yeah, $200,000-$300,000.
Really?
Yeah, San Diego, I know.
Yes, paradise. You ever been here?
No, but I heard it was really nice.
Oh, you need to come. And when you come, I'm going to treat you like a princess, honey. We're going to go to the theater.
I got
to
come then.
Yes, come. You're retired now, so you ain't got nothing but time to luxuriate.
That's right. That is absolutely right.
Okay. Going there. Who that in the background?
That's my husband.
Hi, no, husband.
He's doing something with collard greens, cleaning them.
Ooh, what does he do with his collard greens? Does he put meat in it or does he just do vegetable broth?
Oh no, we're here in North Carolina. We do meat.
Oh, what you put some ham hocks?
Smoked ham hock, a little ham, or something like that.
Yikes! Mm-hmm. You know what? I just have.
Are
some
you a vegetarian?
Greens. No. No, girl, yeah. I eat some meat, but I'm really trying to change my diet because I'm going to be 60 in a couple weeks. And
God,
I just, yesterday I went through something, I don't know what it was, my leg from my ankle up to my head, I was having shooting pains and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, this is not good.
That's turning 60, honey.
I'm
way ahead of you.
Ooh, wee. Well, brains. Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney and Carolyn Taylor.
Thank you.
We are here to talk just about some life stuff. Now, you know, Carolyn has a lot of experience from when she was working, bless her heart. She ain't got to work no more. God is good. When she was working in the mental health and counseling people, you know, and I want to talk to her about that. But I want to talk to her from a different perspective because it's always downtrodden. All these poor people with mental health problems and they can't get this and they can't do that. But, you know, some people learn to manage their mental health. Some people actually take their medication with mental health. Some people learn to thrive and use their pain and turn it into their passion with great counselors and facilitators like Carolyn. I also want to talk to her about what we can do as family members, friends, and community members to support people in the mental health area. Because I'm going to tell you, brains, it's scary.
Absolutely.
You have no idea when somebody is going to go from a flicker to a flame.
Absolutely.
We have no idea what their trigger is. We don't know if they're self-medicating. You know, we don't know what anger is. And, you know, people's crazy. How you go into the grocery store and shoot up every doggone body? What in the world could be on your mind? How are people getting so desensitized? So first, let's start, Carolyn, tell me a little bit about your experience and how you show up in the world and how you found mental health to help people.
Well, April, as you said, I had been in the business for actually over 30 years when I retired 11 years ago. And I've always, since a little girl, had a need to help people. And I was going in administration, and I decided that the world of work out there in terms of the business world was not for me. And I wanted to help people. And that's what I have done for 30 years. I had a private practice in New York for 11 years. I worked with child guidance, and I've worked with 4 different hospitals, as well as a clinic, outpatient clinic in Bridgeport, Connecticut. I lived 30 plus years in Connecticut, and that's where most of my work was done, New York and Connecticut. But it was just important to me to help people in that fashion and in that area, because as you said, there, in particular today, there are a lot of people with a lot of problems in the mental health issues. And half of them don't even know that, because a lot of people just don't believe in going to therapy. I had a private practice for 11 years in New York, and I had many, many patients from diverse arenas. And it was just something that was needed to be done. Particularly, I found that a lot of my patients, people of color, wanted to, their children to come into therapy rather than to be on medication, because they felt that medication was too dangerous. And I was able to help a lot of people in that way. And I was just happy to do that.
Well, I'm happy to hear that, because the schools were strong proponents of getting your child diagnosed. I don't think you had a lot of influence as to what medication or what treatment, but some of these kids was walking around like zombies.
Yes.
So that they would sit there and they would be quiet. Now, you know, like I know, there's always been children and they bad.
Yeah.
And they're active and they're loud, but that's what kids do. But when you have a classroom and you're trying to educate them and you don't have any other support, no teacher's aid or anything, you want them to be quiet. You want them not to disrupt the other children. So these kids are medicating. They were medicating these kids, but now, what I see they're doing in schools, and I think is so impressive, you know, it used to be corporate punishment. You go in the back and your teacher would either hit your bottom or hit your hands with that ruler. Exactly. But now they're putting them to the side and they're teaching them emotional freedom technique where they're tapping. They're teaching them yoga and meditation, where they're quieting that monkey mind. They're really trying to incorporate things with these kids so that they have tools that will last them a lifetime. But then they go home to dysfunctional households where the parents probably need more treatment than the kids do.
Yes.
So it's hard to offset that. What do we do when we are a person that has a family member that really has a challenge or mental health? How do we, you know, how do we adjust? We have to adjust our lives, but what do we do? Because we're scared.
Yeah, we are scared, but what we really should do, in my mind, is to first look at the root cause. There are a lot of kids who have been in foster homes that are adopted by people who are taking care of them in foster care, kids who have been born with drug addiction. And oftentimes, the foster care parents don't necessarily, they're not told what's going on with them. And we need to be able to look at the root cause in terms of what's making them have ADD or ADHD, what's making them to have behavioral problems. And then do, just as you mentioned, in terms of what some of the schools are doing, is to be able to differentiate and help the children to work this out in ways in which it doesn't make the kid feel like they are bad, but rather to deal with the behaviors. Because once a child internalizes the fact that they are bad, then they're going to continue to do that and act out because they need attention. They're stalled. more attention. Mm-hmm. So we really need to first look at the root cause, and more institutions need to be able to tell the foster parents or parents who adopt these children what is going on and what happened when they were born. Were they born drug addicted? Mm-hmm. Were they born alcohol addicted? Because the behaviors are going to be similar.
And also check out these foster parents to make sure that they are not instilling some of these bad behaviors, because all these foster parents, sometimes it's just about a check. My aunt raised over 50 foster children.
God bless her.
One of them went on to be a doctor. The other one went on to be a professional football player. The other two turned out to be great mothers because she loved and nurtured them.
Yes. And that's what they need. That's what they fight for, attention. That's what they need. That's what they lack. The love and the nurturing from someone who sincerely wants to be there for them. And who was not there just for the check.
Okay, so you've got the adolescent, I mean, you've got the young child in the formative years. Now let's move to adolescence. Let's move to teenage years, 17, 18. They get desensitized, Carolyn, with these cotton-picking video games. I really didn't realize how crazy it was until the pandemic. During the pandemic, I started watching the gangster movies on Netflix. Okay, I had changed my name to La Heifer. I mean, I was the boss, okay? But what I was watching, and I said, you know what, April, pay attention to what you are putting in your brain. Be careful. Mm-hmm. They were shooting up and killing people just because they didn't like what they said or because they did something. There was no negotiation.
Okay.
I was getting so desensitized. You know, I'm watching these murders. And these people just killing one another. So I can only imagine what is happening when these kids are endlessly playing these video games and you get points and you get credit for how vicious or how many people you kill. And then they reenact this in real life, especially if they already touched, if they already have a challenge, this just magnifies it. You know, what are some of the signs and some of the symptoms that, that parents should look for? Is it when your kid is isolated? What's going on? How can we check in with them?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer, really, because there could be so many different variables involved. Number one, the parent needs to understand that teenagers are going to have ups and downs in terms of where their personality lies, in terms of whether they're depressed, whether they feel isolated, alone, whether their friends have ignored them. There's so many variables involved. And also, what's the parents teaching them? Let's look at this young 18-year-old who killed 10 people in Buffalo, who had racist parents. I'm sure he looked at many of those types of videos. And with the parents instilling racism, it was just easy for him to go and do something so psychotic. And it's very, very sad, but they're going to continue to buy these kind of videos because they sell and people want excitement because they're bored. But if a teenager, I feel, is being isolated, particularly if they're introverted, and a parent needs to know what's going on with the child in terms of their personality, what are they doing, who are their friends,
that's right,
how involved are they with these friends, what are they teaching each other? What are they exploring in terms of games and things that they're doing?
Going through their room, going through their backpack, going through their car. You ain't gonna live in my house and just, you know, I don't know what's going on. I'm gonna know what's going on in my house.
Exactly. Oh, you know, a lot of parents are ambivalent because they say, okay, this is a time of when they're the age they need to have some freedom. And I agree with that. They need to have some freedom, but there should be some stipulations in their house. And they still need to know what's going on. What's on that computer? Who are they interacting with? Are they interacting with strangers? Do you know these people? Do you know their friends? Do you know their friends' parents? Parents have to be more, and it's very sad, because you're really ambivalent, and you're really wondering whether I should or shouldn't, because I want to give them freedom. I want them to be able to make decisions.
Okay.
But freedom, you have to.
Freedom have is to. Earned, baby.
Exactly.
Freedom
exactly.
is earned. It's not just something that's given. Children, in my opinion, want discipline. They want yes. regulation. They want yes. to know that somebody cares about them. They want to know that there's some boundaries. There will exactly. be some boundaries up in here. I told my exactly. kids, you're not going to talk to me crazy. And you know, some of these parents let their kids talk to them crazy, let them cuss at them. I wish you would even call me a liar. No. Mm-hmm. We're not going to put up with that. There's got to be rules because they have to move in and be independent contributors to society.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. And exactly. It must be rules.
Right. But you know, you teach your kids to be a racist. Okay. So is that going to get them a job? Is that going to make them rich? Is that going to be the next innovative thing that the world turns to? No, you're going to create a monster. You're going to
That's create right.
somebody that is isolated. Somebody that doesn't have very many friends. Somebody right. may not be able to even hold a job.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So you mm-hmm. think that you're doing something because you don't like the color of somebody's skin. That's ignorance. Do you exactly. have anybody, any friends? I've got friends of every color. I've dated guys of all nationalities because Absolutely. I'm curious. Curiosity didn't kill the cat. Curiosity right. manifested great things like the lion.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, now, Carolyn, let's talk about as they've moved from their formative years to adolescence, now they're full-blown adults. Mm-hmm. And they get into this world of self-medicating. They know that there's something wrong, but they don't like the feeling that these medications give them. One of my friends had to take injections because he wouldn't take his pills. And he ended up dying by suicide because he couldn't regulate the injection. You know, he'd take it, what, I think every 30 days or no, every 3 months or something like that. That's a long time to be in your system.
Mm-hmm.
So the police come up on you. You know, and you have an episode or somebody calls, some family member calls the police and says, hey, look, my brother or my sister is having a mental illness challenge. Please come and help us escort them off the property. But you know what? They don't come as peace officers. They mm-hmm. come as peace mm-hmm. officers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's because they're not trained brains. What you have to understand, when you call the police, baby, you ain't calling him over for milk and cookies.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You call him because it's a disturbance.
Yeah. But you know what, April, that's a double-edged sword because the police are just, especially if it's a rookie or someone who's only been a policeman for 6 months, a year, first thing they think of is self-preservation. They want to save themselves. They don't know the issue. They don't know how serious it is. They don't know what this person's going to do. They don't know very much about mental health, even though most police departments say they train their people in mental health. The training is so limited. They do not know because you can't group everyone into a bundle. Each of these diagnoses are different. Each would manifest themselves in different ways. Every person is different based on their environment, based on how they grew up, based on what their own ego strengths are, which are strengths that they have internally that no one else teaches them, but they're born with this in terms of the DNA. You just don't know what's going on. So it's very hard to decide who's the criminal or what they're going to do, or should I shoot or should I not? I think there should be rules and regulations in terms of knowing how far to go and to maybe take someone in the mental health field with them so they can help understand what's going on in the moment. But everybody is reacting and you just don't know who's really seriously ill or who's pretending or who's on the medication, who's overdosing, who's not. It's a very, very complex situation.
And the police officer, who's to say that he doesn't have a mental health challenge?
Absolutely.
Okay, because all he sees is lies, death, destruction, manipulation all day long.
Absolutely.
So he becomes desensitized. Everybody mm-hmm. he runs up against is a suspect. He's looking at everybody with a side eye. I say that there should be limits to a police officer out in the field. He should be able to work out in the field for 10 good years. And then go in the office, work with, you know, recruiting, do something else to decompress. Mm-hmm. They need to have mm-hmm. a PERC team. They need to have a mental health team. Everybody was talking about defund the police. I don't say defund the police. You know, right. fund them, but fund them right. Okay. But fund mm-hmm. them right so that people understand. I get it. Somebody pulls a gun on you, you're going to react.
Exactly.
Somebody pulls a knife on you, you're going to react.
Exactly.
But I just don't understand why you so quick to react when they black and brown. And I say this brains with a, I'm brushing this with a broad stroke.
Mm-hmm.
The young man goes in, he kills up all these people in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. They take him out with dignity and respect.
Okay. Yeah.
And then he goes to court. Wait, and then he goes to court and has the nerve to say that he is not guilty.
Not guilty. Now you know that's a mental health issue right there.
Okay. It's a mental health issue of society for allowing that. Yes. There are other countries that wouldn't have even took him to jail. He's standing there in jail. He's getting, three hots and a cot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And a public defender that their community has to pay for to defend him because he's killed up all these people in the grocery store.
Exactly.
It's awful, you know. And then you got these politrickians.
Mm.
Okay.
Interesting.
You know, yeah. You got them in there doing nothing.
Yeah.
Not as any administration. I don't see them doing nothing.
Yeah.
What are we gonna do? They say get the guns off the street. Good luck with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My thing is stop making bullets.
Yeah, when you can go on Google and make a gun.
You can make a gun or stop selling bullets.
Why is it readily available to anybody? That doesn't make sense to me. You know, who's allowing this?
I interviewed a woman on my show a couple weeks ago. She was a police officer in London. She had just retired and mm-hmm. never carried a gun. She said she didn't even want to carry mace. Mm-hmm. She never carried a gun. Well, and here we are. We got 15, 16-year-olds with guns.
Yes.
It's really crazy. So as we move, after we move from the young adult, as you get older, mental health takes on a different form of mm-hmm. dementia,
mm-hmm.
of Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
What is that transition like? What's going on in the head of a person that has maybe dementia or Alzheimer's? I'm not really sure.
Well, those diagnoses are two distinct. There are two distinct differences. And oftentimes, people who do not understand it, they get them intertwined and confused. Dementia is just the aging process of a person getting older in terms of forgetfulness. Now, mental health is measured by degree. You know, dementia can be mild, it can be moderate, it could be serious. It could be to the point that you just forget everything. Most people, as they age, when they do get dementia, it's usually about being able to remember things from the past and not being able to remember everything that happened yesterday. Now, as opposed to Alzheimer's is a very serious mental illness and it's usually genetic, and you can have Alzheimer's as early as your 40s or 50s, depending on your DNA. But when you do get it, your brain deteriorates and you are not able to grasp, not just in terms of your memory, but you don't know where you are, who's there. You don't know the time of day. You don't know the president. You don't know any of that. But it is a more serious disease. Mental health disease that oftentimes people generally die from Alzheimer's, depending how serious it is.
Right. They say it's also a regression. I mean, you really move back to your infancy stage. You know, you get out of the bathroom and, you know, feeding yourself, all of that. You just really kind of spiral backwards.
Yes, you don't know. You don't know what's going on. You don't know who you're dealing with. And with Alzheimer's, oftentimes, even when it starts to progress and it's mild or moderate, you can often leave the home. The door is open. You can leave the home and find yourself lost and not know where you are. You could leave the home without shoes, without clothes, and you still don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I found a couple in my neighborhood. I found a couple senior citizens, you know, and I brought them to my house and had lemonade. And, you know, my husband works in law enforcement, so I had him contact their families. I say this to you really quickly, Brains. If you have a parent with dementia or Alzheimer's, please, please tag them. Please, please tag them. Please, please tag them.
Absolutely.
Get them, you know, tell them this is a pretty bracelet, you know, that this is whatever. This is a pretty necklace with your phone number. You don't know what you don't know. You don't know who they're going to come encounter with. You don't know if they're going to cross the street and get hit by a car. You don't know how far they're going to be able to wander off. They're going to get on a bus.
Exactly.
You can't tell this.
Exactly. Exactly.
You can't tell this what's going on. My girlfriend lost her mother. She let her out. She said, "Mama, wait right here. I'm going to park the car."
Mm-hmm.
3 hours later, she didn't know where her mother was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mama had wandered off.
That's right. That's right. In fact, I had about 3 months ago, my neighbor behind me, he had his mom living with him, had lost his wife who had died, who had had cancer and had died. He had his mom living with him. And this one day, this late in the afternoon, this lady came. I didn't know her. I didn't know she was with him. Came into my yard and she had cigarettes in her hand, you know, a pack. She had a lighter in the other hand. She was in her slippers and she did not know who she was or where she was. But she said, "I live over there." She was pointing to another neighbor's yard.
Hmm.
And I said, "Oh my God, I don't know who this lady is, how far she's walked. Let me just call 911. And that's what I did. And after we called 911, we were able to somehow figure out that she lived with her son behind me.
Mm.
And we were able to, and he had just come home from work. So we were able to bring her back to where she was, you know, to her home.
Mm-hmm.
But we did not know what was going on. But I would say to anybody, if that happens, the first thing you need to do is call 911 because you gotta be able to sort out what's going on.
Exactly. And
unfortunately, 5 months later, she subsequently passed away, but she had serious Alzheimer's.
Right. And it is detrimental. So some of the things that I've heard that people can do that I'm working on right now is to stimulate your brain. Your brain is a muscle, Brains.
Right. Right.
I'm learning to play the guitar. Carolyn, it ain't no joke. Okay.
I
never remember the muscle memory, trying to read the music, keeping time, trying to sing and make it sound like something is work.
I'm
exhausted afterwards. I feel like I've had a workout, but I've worked out my brain. I read. I found something else that really impacted my health was this cotton picking computer.
Ah.
Looking at this screen for 6-7 hours a day, I was getting nauseous.
That's right.
My vision is impaired.
That's right.
What am I reading? What am I thinking? My blood pressure was changed.
Yes.
All of these things. So I step away. I give myself working hours. I step away. I go have lunch. I go out to the park. I take my book. I actually have a book and I read it. Can you believe that?
That's right. That's right.
I'm reading right now, Viola.
I'm reading the same thing.
Oh, good.
I'm halfway.
Maybe we should start an online book club.
I'm halfway through. Boy, she's been through something.
Did you read
God Will? Bless her. Pardon me?
Did you read Will Smith's book?
Oh, I haven't read it. I haven't read it. I gotta get his book.
You want to read that because you'll understand the slap.
Yeah.
You'll understand the slap. And that's another thing. I tell people that you know what? You can judge him. Well, I've worked with him and Jada before.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a different type of dynamic. But you don't understand the epigenetics. You don't understand the generational trauma that he's already been through.
You don't know when
you're going to go from a flicker to a flame.
Right.
You got all this pressure under you. You got all these things, you know, growing up thinking that you were a coward and that you bullied and being, you know, he was hit in the face with a lock and all kinds of stuff.
Mm,
and you show out and you react. Mm-hmm. If you have a challenge in your life and you feel that, you know, you're a ticking time bomb, tell somebody.
Absolutely.
Not on social media.
Absolutely.
Tell but somebody. You know,
he had embarrassed him already in 2016.
But it's deeper than what we actually know. And these people are entertainers.
Yeah, and you know what? People should stop judging other people, period. But certainly know the facts. Have some sensitivity. You know, we're not going to condone violence, but certainly he was at his wit's end. I can imagine he responded that way, why he responded that way. And I'm not mad with him because Chris Rock needs to change the way he does comedy, because your children and wives are off limit. You do not touch.
You know what? I tell you, and that's a double-edged sword too. Okay, like my boy Dave Chappelle.
I
love Dave Chappelle too. I love him too. And you know, the transgender community are not listening. Ray, what you need to do first is not listen to all the negativity, because see, that's what you're getting off on. That's what you're feeding off on. Listen to the sensitivity.
Yes.
What he's saying, because he's speaking volumes.
Yeah.
You know, he's speaking volumes as to being sensitive. But I tell you, Carolyn, sometimes the stuff is funny.
Yeah, funny.
You used to be able to call a little person a midget and talk about them, and it'd be funny, and they'd be in the audience laughing now. Talk about the gay man and call him a sissy, and it was funny. You used to be able to talk about the fat girl, and it was funny. Now everybody's got to be so politically correct. Well, you know what? I'm still going to laugh. I don't sit in the front row at the comedy show, but I'm still going to laugh. Because I laugh to keep from crying.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
So
you have to be able to laugh. But I just feel that if you're talking to an audience and someone's directly there in front of you, and you want to come up with a joke, that's one thing. But don't talk about someone's family, parents. I just feel that I agree with you. Once upon a time, you could do that. But the world is so complex and so chaotic today. Everybody's on edge. Everybody's on edge. And you got to be able to relate to where the world is. Mm-hmm. And you got to be able to relate to the times. Mm-hmm. This is just something you just don't do with families now. Talk to him, you know, that's one thing. Man to man, talk to him, make a joke of him about him. But right there in that form, that was inappropriate in my mind.
Right. Well, and you know, let's say, and the world is watching. So my mother say, you know, where you make the mess is where you clean it up.
Amen. Amen to that. Amen to that. Absolutely.
So let's ask some fun questions about you. Okay. What makes you happy? And I don't want to hear about the kids and the grandkids and all that and the husband. What truly makes you happy on the inside?
Well, you have a sense of, and I once again, I apologize for what UPS did with your picture, but what makes me happy, one of the things that makes me happy is to be able to be in a room, quiet, and be able to paint a picture. Mm-hmm. And my thing is abstracts and still lifes. I don't like doing caricatures. I don't like doing people's faces. That's what makes me happy. I love the environment. I love, love, love flowers, plants, trees. And that just relaxes me, and it makes me happy. To be able to be in what I call the room I was in earlier, I call that my prayer room, to be able to pray and meditate and read the Bible, that makes me happy.
Makes me happy. Okay. What's your favorite food?
Ooh, good question. You know, my girlfriend has a cousin who's a baker, and she made me for Mother's Day the most delicious cupcakes that would melt in your mouth. And I would imagine, I think my favorite food is probably a dessert, like cupcakes or like cheesecake. But food in general, I love to cook. I cook everything, anything, everything, pretty much. Italian food, I cook American soul food. Mm-hmm. I probably can cook just about anything, but it makes me happy to be able to cook and to do things for other people. I mean, I'm not a people pleaser as such, but I like to help. I like to help people. I'm a helper.
Well, so I mean, you know, that's why I went into mental health. That's why you went into mental health. Absolutely. Yes. What are three things that you absolutely cannot live without?
Oh, good question. What is it that I can't live without? I can't live without the ability to be able to bathe. Bathe.
I love a bath. You think you like showers or baths?
I love baths.
I love a bath too.
I love a bath on the quiet Friday evening when I have a glass of wine and bubble bath, and it's quiet in my bathroom. I just had my bathroom done over, so I love it now. I like to read. But what makes me happy? And you said nothing about people. Okay.
No. Three things that you can't live without.
I can't live without.
So you said I know that we
need money to exist, particularly in this day and time. But being that I'm now retired, I've learned to live on less, and I've learned to make do.
Yeah.
You know, not go without everything I want, but to make do and not feel that I must have this. I just with COVID, I've become more quiet, more reserved, and I don't want to be around a whole lot of people.
I don't either. And I'm such a socialite. We were at the play with my daughter. I was like, okay. After I did all the, hey, how you doing? All that. I sat back. She says, Mommy, we've got front row seats. I said, no, let's just kind of sit up so I can, you know, do the helicopter view. I'm not trying to do all of that.
I hear you. Exactly. So, I still wear my mask.
I do too. And been vaccinated. Okay.
Yes. Me too.
If you were an appliance in the kitchen, what appliance would you be, Carolyn?
Good question. Probably a wash machine, because I wash 2 or 3 times, 4 times a week. Wow. Now that I have my grandson here who goes and exercises every morning and you know, uses a lot of clothes.
I know.
Probably a wash machine, because I have this thing for cleanliness. Cleanliness is next to godliness.
That's
so
right.
So I would probably want a wash machine to make sure my clothes are clean.
Okay. And in closing, Queen, what do you want your legacy to be?
Oh, wonderful question. Wonderful question. I would probably say that my most significant contribution to life was having my children. And I want to think that I did the best job that I could as a mother. And they tell me that all the time, that I am a wonderful mother. And I probably would want to know that I made them happy and that they're good contributing citizens to the world, and I did my part as a mother. I would like for that to be my legacy, that I made that contribution.
Well, you've made that contribution to me and all the brains here on the edge. Thank you for taking us, you know, through different phases of mental health, what we can do, how we can assist people with these challenges, how we can recognize the signs and the symptoms, how we can ask and raise our hand for help, how we can tell people that we love them and support them, how we can make a mean pot of greens and have a good bubble bath. Thanks so much for being with us. And we're going to talk about that book club, because I think that would be fun.
I think so too. Thank you so much, Cheryl. I would appreciate it.
April.
Oh, God. Same April, time. I know it's April. April, you look like my cousin Cheryl.
Okay. Cheryl must be super cool. Cheryl might be super cool. All right. Thank you so much for being here on the
Angela. I know it's April. Forgive me. April Mahoney. Absolutely, April.
That is, you know what? If somebody just calls me outside of my name and it ain't an ugly one, I take it as a compliment because that was on their heart. So, Cheryl, here's to you, baby.
Absolutely.
Talk to you soon, Carolyn.
Thank you, April. Appreciate it.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye now.